This week, we start our investor insights by taking a look at the tax implications of two-pot retirement. But before we get to that, big shout out to James Greenfingers Morris for some creative ideas for us around what we can do with our investor wall. We're definitely going to look at that wall. We're going to adjust it. We're looking at the tax implications that come with withdrawing from your savings pot. Last week, we said don't do it. We're looking into the tax implications of it all. I had the privilege of speaking to the foremost authority on the matter. That would be the commissioner at SARS, Edward Kiesvetter. Not you.
I did not think you were talking about me.
But I looked at you and you were a bit worried there. Now, I spoke to Edward Kiesvetter around this. And who better to hear it from than SARS themselves around how they're going to be taxing the two-pot system. And there were a couple of things. First of all, you have to be registered for tax to qualify to withdraw from your pension pot. That was something that they made very clear. And I think it goes without saying that, I mean, if you're contributing towards this from an employer perspective, there's a likelihood that you'll be registered for tax. But if you're not, that's a key requirement.
But even at retirement, at 55, if you want your monies out, you need to be registered for tax. There's no way around that, regardless whether you're taking two-pot saving withdrawals or retiring.
Because SARS doesn't want to lose out on their share.
Correct.
The other question I asked was around why the savings pot is being taxed in the first place. And the answer was quite simple. It was the contributions into your retirement are not taxed. Therefore, at some point, we do need to levy a tax. Yeah. So that was a very straightforward
answer.
There's
a lot of talk like, this is a SARS scam. No, no, it was tax-free on the way in. It's always taxed on the way out. Whether you wait for 55 or death or 95 or savings pot, you're getting taxed on the way out.
Can't avoid it, shouldn't avoid it, don't even try to think about avoiding it, because the other question that was raised around that was, okay, if it is going to be taxed, at what rate is it being taxed at? Now, the commissioner didn't give very clear percentages, but we all know it's going to be taxed at your marginal rate. It is going to be added to your income, and then you're going to be taxed. Now, the danger here is when added to income, it could potentially throw you into a different tax bracket. And so you'll be taxed at that higher tax bracket. And the commissioner's rationale around this was very simple, is that those contributions are income in nature and therefore are taxed as income.
They absolutely are. And it might. I mean, let's say you're earning, I'm looking at a tax table here, you're earning 370,500 rand. You're paying 42 plus 26%. Nice. Cool, cool, cool. And then it pops you into the higher bracket. And so not your entire income. In other words, they don't retroactively go and take your other income and tax it at that higher rate. Mm. It's just the money above that threshold now gets taxed at that higher percentage rate. And you will pay tax on it. Less, of course, anything that you owe to SARS. So if you owe SARS money, they will take a little grab of that too. But it will potentially push you into a higher tax bracket. So you think you're going to get taxed at, let's say, 26%, but actually it pops you higher, so you get taxed at 31%.
The debt part that you just brought up, that is critical, because I spoke to the commissioner about that as well, and he was very clear to say any outstanding tax liabilities will be settled first, unless you have a tax payment plan or an arrangement that you've made with the receiver, in which case they'll say, okay, you've got an arrangement in place for that. Therefore, we don't need to take from here to settle that. But if you have outstanding taxes, so the reality is you could find yourself in a situation where you withdraw the 30,000. Let's say it's taxed at 30%. Or even 33%, you're left with 20,000 of that. You have to pay for the fund administration's admin fees. They're allowed to charge that admin fee.
Is there a cap on that? Because it seems to be a couple of hundred rand, but
I don't think there has been a clear cap on it. But the other thing around it is, from a fund administrator perspective, they're never going to let it go without that fee. They're never going to say, oh, it's a couple of hundred rand, let's not charge it. They're obviously looking to make
money.
If fund managers and asset managers are expecting that about 70 to 80 billion rand is going to be put into the market and withdrawn from these savings pots, 70 to 80 billion rand at 1%, if fund managers are charging you 1%, or even at 10 basis points, 0.1%, that's going to be a significant amount of revenue that they're going to get for free for processing this withdrawal. But that's the second thing, right? So there's the element of the tax, there's the element of that withdrawal. And then that debt with SARS. If you have outstanding debt, that will be settled first. Then you will receive what is left. So realistically, you could find yourself out of the 30,000 that you withdraw in the first year, receiving none of it, potentially.
Yeah. And 100%. And even if, so let's take, you take the 30,000 out, you're at the bottom tax bracket, which is 18% of taxable income. So you're not likely, I mean, you maximum you're likely to get after fees and taxes, 25. I mean, folks need to come with some reality there. And if you're in higher tax brackets, which if you've got 30, you quite possibly are, you're not even going to get 25. It might just be 20.
And then, of course, there's the conversation that follows after that is the fact that to contribute and get that savings pot back up to the 30,000 that you would have withdrawn is going to take you a minimum of 30 months at 1,000 rand each, which assumes you're contributing around 3,000 rand to your entire pension because of the 2-1 split. So in order to get it in at 1,000 rand per month, you have to do 3,000 into your pot, so that the 2,000 goes into the big pot, the one pot, and then the 1,000 into the savings pot. And you have to do that for 30 months just to get back to the 30,000 you withdrew. So again, we've shared our thoughts on the matter. We've now shared the tax implications of the two-pot system. Do with that information what you will. Let's move on to our stock picks.
Yeah.
It's been a wild week on the pick side. We're going to take James's advice on this, and we're going to split it up going forward into local picks and offshore picks. Mm-hmm. And we're going to try and get as much value out of this as possible for those listening and those watching. And this week we've got 3 local, 3 offshore. Let's start with the locals. We've got Redefine, Kumba, and the educational providers. Redefine was spicy this week.
Redefine were epic. So they, I mean, you know, the Redefine, but let's go, and I need to quote them. So this was from a Maryland Guardian article. 2 things that they said. They were talking about Pick n Pay and Stay Clinical just not being unprofitable for their businesses. But the 2 things on Pick n Pay, who had, of course, had that, well, horror update, but is anyone surprised these days? Part of the agreement with Pick n Pay is that in the remaining stores, they need to upgrade those stores so that the offering now becomes competitive. And then if that wasn't enough knife to the heart, it's no secret that Pick n Pay does underperform compared to the likes of Checkers.
That was shots fired, not by myself, not by Simon, by Redefine.
Redefine, your landlord.
Your landlord is saying, guys, you're slacking. Our other tenants are Checkers. We can see the difference.
They've got, obviously, there's foot traffic and the like. But many of these leases are also, there's a revenue component as well. They take maybe a few points on revenue or something, etc. So
we're not actually making money from you guys at this point.
And if we put Mar Baker in here with her fantastic pies, we might do better. I don't know.
That's any pie makers statement out there. That's a statement. Yeah, yeah. Especially for Sean Summers and team. I mean, we know the challenges they have to go through and everything that plagues Pick n Pay at the moment. And for your landlord to be saying such things is not a vote of confidence.
No, not at all, not at all. Now, you know, I mean, Sean will tell you that things will be better in time. They are closing underperforming stores and et cetera, et cetera. It just comes back to, you know, I mean, Checkers is so far ahead. I mean, you know, Pick n Pay could double in their improvements and Checkers would still be like so far ahead.
So do we like Redefine? The stock is up almost 14% for the month, sitting just under 5 rand a share. We are in the spirit of liking the REITs and the property companies. We've spoken about HighProp and GrowthPoint. We kind of like the fact that lower interest rates are going to be beneficial for them. Are we liking Redefine at 4.80-ish, 5 rand-ish?
Yeah, short answer, yes. I like the REITs because they're cheap. They're at discount to NAV, which is what you want. They got nice yields. Office is still a problem, although we're seeing office improve. Now, let's be clear, off a low base, vacancies are still extreme and rent reversions are still negative, but not as negative or as extreme on the vacancies. There's also, I was chatting with Gary Boyson earlier in the week, and he made a good point. With rates coming down, suddenly those good yields at government bonds and RSA retail savings bonds, etc., are coming down. So where do you find those 8, 9, 10% yields?
REITs.
Yeah.
Consistency in the REITs. That's the one thing that we appreciate about them. Okay, so we're liking Redefine at the moment. Are we liking any other ones more than Redefine?
So, I mean, Spear, although that chart's run hard. Look, I'm largely lazy in property. I just buy the ETF and And I'm so lazy. I actually turned out I owned both of them, both the Satrix and the Core, and what now 10X. Mm. 10X is interesting. They weight by yield. So higher yield, higher weighting, which can be a problem when you weight by dividend or something like that. Mm. It's always looking back. And then what happens if you're, I don't know, cancel the dividend and suddenly it's like,
or there's a special dividend or
something like that.
Adjustments.
So,
that,
so there's, yeah, there's risks there. NEPI's looking good. I mean, it's almost hard to find a really bad one. And I suppose there will be one with really high office concentration, but they've all sort of diluted that. I mean, Octodec, Spear, Storage, Vukele, I mean, across the board, they're just looking good. And the charts are starting to look attractive for, you know, they all bounced after the pandemic and then kind of peaked, late 21, and have done, you know, for 3 years, done nicks, and they're all back at those levels. Exceptions. I mean, Spear, you know, roaring off into the sunset, as is what they do best in many senses. But it's just a sector that I think is offering opportunity. And let's be clear, this thing, the sector peaked in late 2017. I mean, it's been close on 7 years.
Mm, we are due for some bullish movements. Okay, cool. So we like Redefine. Kumba, they have been on their chart looks the inverse to what you prefer. It starts on the top left and goes bottom, right. And
which is upside down.
Yes, it's going the wrong way. Someone should tell Kumba that the chart needs to be going the other way. But nonetheless, it's kind of finding a bit of help and support at around 360 Rand a share. And now they've just announced more than 7 billion Rand is going to go into their Sishen plant for improvements. And even though iron ore prices are still under a lot of pressure from no demand, their margins are still great.
Their margins are always great. Look, iron ore, I've got a list here of commodities which I track, and year to date, iron ore is the worst. Mm. Best is cocoa, which saddens me a whole lot. But it's. I mean, the iron ore price seems to like $100. It bounces up, it comes back down. It bounces up, it comes back down. At $100, Kumba makes truckloads of money. Don't underestimate the truckloads of money that they make. And that thing that they announced, and I need to read it because I can't remember what it stands for. Now I can't see it. The margin enhancing UHDMS technology, which they're going to spend some $10 billion on, is a real game changer. I mean, so what they do is they can now mine lower grade and make it higher grade. Because remember, Kumba has high grade iron ore relative to South America and Western Australia. Mm. So they can now mine higher grade. They say trebles proportion of premium quality production volume at Sishen to 55% from current 18%. That gets them an extra $2 or $3 per ton. So, you know, which is not giant, but, you know, it's an extra 2 or 3%. Just, you know, thank you for playing. Mm. It means that they can extend the life of the mine, because stuff which previously they were like, that's like of no use, they can suddenly upgrade that. Look, it's going to cost them, what, $11.2 billion. They've already sunk sort of $3 or $4 billion into it. The iron ore story, I like it. At this point in time, there's all the worries, you know, there's too much steel in the world, China's dumping, but that is cyclical. It comes and goes. That's fine. The bigger challenge for them is Transnet, but everything I've heard, and I have no doubt that you have as well, speaking to CEOs from Andres van Heerden, who sells stock to Transnet to fix railway lines, to people who use it to get stuff to the harbors, is saying things are looking up here.
Well, to be fair, Transnet mysteriously found the parts for the locomotives. We were told in the past that these parts are specific to China. They're very specialized. Nothing can be done. And then Tungela put out results and said these parts are generic. And now Transnet says, oh, wait, the parts are generic. We actually can find them. And so we're going to get that fixed. So that's a story for another day. Let's look at education providers. Stadio, Advitech, Curo all gave us results all in the space of a couple of days. We can't have them all. We probably could have them all, but I mean, which of those are you liking the most?
Advitech. Although I got to say, the Advitech results, the results were excellent. And I never got to speak to the new chap, Jeff.
I spoke to Jeff White.
Oh, did you?
Hmm.
Why wouldn't he talk to me? Maybe he's not a morning person.
Yeah,
maybe
no.
He's doing assembly at
half past
six.
He's not a 6:30 a.m. person.
The growth is a little bit slowing. If you go back and look over the last couple of years and pull out the pandemic, growth is a little bit slowing down there. But you know what I like with the schools is, firstly, it's discretionary, but it's not. Mm-hmm. Families are going to spend. They are sitting at around the sort of 70 to 80% capacity, which means you add a student into that school and your cost doesn't change, but you've got the fees coming through. So you win on that regard. Little bit of East Africa, that's doing quite nicely as well. I mean, so Cura's the one I'm not thrilled by. Stadio I like. I like the asset-light business model, although they do want to add 20,000 seats to the business. So it's just toss-up between Stadio and Advitech. And if I've got to choose, I'll go with Advitech because I already hold it.
They're all adding campuses. They're all expanding. They're all looking to increase those numbers. And interestingly enough, as they put out the numbers, I think Curo did it last week, Thursday-ish. Yeah. And then Stadio and Advitech did it on the same day this past Monday. Interestingly enough, at the same time, Business Tech dropped an article around the remuneration for the CEOs of the three schools. The average remuneration across the three CEOs, well, Roy Douglas would have been the previous CEO of Advitech until February of this year. The average remuneration was just under 17 million rand. It worked out to about 46,000 rand a day for the three CEOs. But we move on. International picks. Nvidia has to start with the, actually, let's save Nvidia for last. They gave us results. Everyone is waiting for that. We can wait a little longer to digest those numbers. We had other picks that we kind of liked in the international space, and I'm just looking at what we decided on. MicroStrategy. That's been an interesting one with the Bitcoin concentration. MicroStrategy CEO made a very conscious decision, very deliberate decision, to load up his balance sheet with Bitcoin. And when the price of Bitcoin goes sky high, the price of MicroStrategy goes through the roof. When the price of Bitcoin comes down, so does the price of MicroStrategy. Is that a good play?
No.
Short and sweet answers. I love them.
Buy Bitcoin. If you want Bitcoin, buy Bitcoin. Don't buy some dodge MicroStrategy nonsense. He's loaded their balance sheet with Bitcoin. I'm having a tour, something on Twitter with someone about it. I'm like, you know what a balance sheet is? A balance sheet should be boring and stable and predictable. And you can't have some of it suddenly flying through the roof and then you look like a genius because tomorrow it collapses through the floor and now suddenly you're in breach of debt covenants and the like. No.
That's got to be an accounting nightmare if I think about fair value adjustments to your portfolio.
Just marked to market, right? So, but Bitcoin 70, and then it's 1,000, and then it's 15,000, and suddenly your balance sheet is in tatters. You could technically be insolvent.
Okay, so we're not liking MicroStrategy as a stock pick at all.
At all. Buy Nike.
Buy Nike. It is trading cheaper. It is trading below $100, and I think MicroStrategy is around $133, $137 odd dollars. The other one, Tencent. Big news out of Tencent.
Yeah, so Tencent is you know what, it's weird, right? Because Tencent, as South African investors, was all we spoke about for what, a decade? It was just like Tencent, Naspers, Tencent, Naspers.
Thank you, Umkus.
Yeah, thank you, Umkus. And then suddenly, like, we all got, and then they tried all those plans, those things, et cetera. But Tencent has a new game. Now, remember the struggles they had of getting games out through China and stuff. And remember, they own a slice of Epic. And anyway, new game, which is called Black Myth Wukong. Second most popular Steam title ever, 10 million sales in 83 hours, over 2 million concurrent players at one point. So this in of itself for Tencent is, I mean, it's a biggie, but it's not, but it just shows you that these folks know what they're doing. And we always focus on their gaming. We kind of ignore WeChat, which is the app in China. Like, if you want to,
they don't use WhatsApp.
No. They use WeChat. But WeChat is like an ecosystem. Like, if you want to book a hair appointment, you book it in WeChat, and then you want to pay for your hair appointment, you pay for it in WeChat. Everything happens.
Which is what
WeChat.
WhatsApp is trying to do now. I mean, we're starting to see it now with the wallet integrations and that sort of thing.
And then, of course, there's the classifieds and all the other bits that they've got. Their advertising business, etc., etc. And this is the challenge. Has been the sell down from processes put some pressure on it. But this is a stock that is on a forward PE of 15, whereas your 10-year mean is 35. Now, I would argue that the 10-year is not massively relevant. I think things have changed, certainly the perception around China, the common prosperity, all of that over the last 5 years. But forward PE of 15?
I'm concerned about, you bring up the streaming stuff and the revenue that they're making from that. Doesn't China put out something to say that they're going to cap how much streaming or how much revenue can be made from online purchasing and all of that stuff?
But that's for Chinese citizens. This is on Steam. You and I can download it.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. So we always focus on Tencent as a gameplay within China. And they've cracked down left, right, and center. And there's hundreds of ways to hack it, etc. But they've cracked down massively on that. But they've got a 40% stake in Epic. They're releasing games on Steam. It's like, cool. Like, no worries at all.
Okay. Are we liking Tencent? Buying Tencent at this price?
Yeah. I think Tencent's looking good. I do. And it's weird because, I mean, I've for a long time been unthrilled by it. And, of course, you could just go buy NASPASS or Process. But at what? 377 Hong Kong dollars? It's doing a consolidation. It's been down at 265 earlier this year. It's been at 405 the beginning of last year. The only concern, perhaps, is China. They're still a China story. There are a lot of folks who will tell you China is uninvestable, that the property bubble has created significant problems because citizens of China are now worried about, you know, their net wealth, which was entitled to property. They don't have any. We now see them buying gold as a sort of plan B in that regard. But there are cheap stocks here. And look, I mean, someone out there is yelling, Alibaba is cheaper. True. But we put Tencent on the list.
Yeah, we've got Tencent on the list. Maybe another time we'll look at Alibaba. Let's look at the big one. NVIDIA got those results, finally came through on Wednesday evening after market close. The market on Wednesday, just building up to that results announcement, had just forgotten about everything else. It was just like NVIDIA above Jerome Powell, above the president, above elections, and the thing with that was I had a conversation with David Shapiro around it. We haven't seen that. We haven't actually seen that much focus being put on one single company in the longest time. And that's a worry. I mean, he expressed that that's a concern to be that engrossed in one company when the S&P has 500 or more.
That's a good point. And I'm trying to think. I mean, what – I don't know. I mean, locally it would have been NASPASS. We've talked about that before. SAB back in its day. But globally, no. I mean, Apple to a point, but not to this level of it.
Results came through from NVIDIA. We got those numbers in. Numbers beat estimates and expectations.
Yeah.
Revenue more than doubled. And
let's be clear, 100%.
122 to be exact. And prior to the numbers being released, the share price was closer to $125, $126 a share. It is still below $120 a share now.
Yeah, yeah.
It has not gone back to the price. And I'm looking at a chart now. When the release came out, the share price shot up to $128, shot down to $116. It's currently at $119-odd in pre-market. We haven't gotten back to pre-results numbers.
No.
And you'd think doubling your revenue, beating all analyst expectations, is a good sign.
So the only thing that makes sense to me, and not much about this does actually make sense, is that it is around their forward guidance, which was perhaps a little smidgen lighter than what the analyst consensus was looking for. But, I mean, the numbers just absolutely, as you say, just blew it out, both on year-on-year, quarter-on-quarter. I mean, their quarter-on-quarter revenue was up 15%. I mean, and let's be clear, the previous quarter was a stonking quarter. I mean, they're doing, you know, okay, so a year ago, quarter-on-quarter was 34% and year-on-year was 200%. They have to start slowing. They are so far ahead, and I know everyone's catching up, but what they're doing, they've also got the software stack, which absolutely works. So you can take the Blackwells or the Grace Hoppers or even the H100s and merge a number of them together to make one giant one coming through. Viv Govender said to me once, he said, your story on NVIDIA matters about ChatGPT-5. So we're on 4.0 at the moment. 5 is rumored to be out late this year. I'm not sure about that. But how big is 5 a leap forward? If 5 is incremental, well, then we're peaked. If 5's another leap, then Gemini's got to follow, Claude's got to follow, Llama's got to follow. Everyone's got to come through and following, which means more training, more working, and
more chips.
More chips. Absolutely more chips. The chart does not look pretty of this particular stock. It is, you know, a little bit of lower highs, a little bit of, well, we haven't got the lower lows yet. We've got to get sub 100 for that. So I've seen prettier looking charts. But I hold it, and I'm not going anywhere.
I think with the forward guidance, I think at some point when you've run as hot as NVIDIA and you've done a stock split and you've done everything you can and revenues keep shooting the lights out, you need to start tapering expectations. And this could, for me, it could have been a very intentional thing to, they could
pull back a bit. And
that's it. They could very well know that they're still going to beat those estimates. But if we give you a more modest expectation, your expectations are tapered down. And if the cost of that tapering down is a $5 move in our share price, then it might be worth it in the long run to keep tapering people down. Because right now, there's so much hype around our business that if we misstep, our share price might crash. Yeah. So to start tapering that kind of market expectation, this could be probably the most genius move by a management team, if that is what they're doing.
I hadn't thought of that. I mean, if that's what they're doing, it is a genius move.
I would do that. I would certainly do that. If I've run that hot and I need to somehow start to cool things, I still know what I'm capable of from a production point of view. Yeah. But and then, to stop these big jumps in my, as you said, if the jumps in the ChatGPT are incremental, the jumps are going to be the jumps are going to be big on NVIDIA. So I want to stop and contain that kind of expectation and just moderate my performance, because now's the time to do that, right?
Yeah. No, 100%. Absolutely. And it's, you know, they had some production issues in this quarter. You can't see it in the numbers at all. They still can't meet demand even close. I mean, and remember, there's like most of the demand out of China is now blocked because of technology sanctions coming out of the US. I mean, it's just, it's still just firing. And I like your idea. Just pull it back a little bit.
Just a little bit. Just enough. And there was, of course, that $50 billion share buyback that they announced. I do like NVIDIA at this price, but I also equally like the iShares Semiconductor ETF. Now, I'm not a big ETF person, but just go look at the ETF chart. Just pull up the ETF chart. And the reason I like it is because you kind of get exposure to exactly what you're saying, Sai, around the fact that with all these sanctions in place, there are other semiconductor manufacturers, like the likes of Taiwan Semiconductors in Taiwan, right? ETF kind of has all of them and has a bit of a concentration between all of those. And if you look at that chart from, I don't know, say March of this year, we were around just shy of 700 points. There was a massive crash down to 200 points. We're now at 225. That could have been the reset to give people opportunity to get into AI and this ChatGPT and this NVIDIA craze in a more balanced way without the concentration risk. So there's another alternative for you. But we do still like NVIDIA. Until next time, investing isn't hard. Just try it.